We are back at the beginning of the Chumash. We missed Parashat Bereshit last time. Almost every year, that's how it comes out. We'll start with Noah, but as you'll see, I'll try to go back to Bereshit also, what is anyhow necessary in order to understand Parashat Noah. We can't understand Noah unless we understand what happened before. So we are on page 30. 31 in English, the beginning of Parashat Noach. Parashat Noach is a parasha that is very difficult. What's the major story in the parasha? The Mabul, the flood, right? It's a disaster that there was no one after like it, ever. Because all of mankind was destroyed besides 8 people. Right? Imagine coming into the ark when the whole world is populated. People, animals, trees, normal world, and coming out to destruction, to nothing, and 8 people only. Right? There is no parallel to it. And obviously it raises many, many questions. A, why did it happen? Right? Second, what can we do that it won't happen again? Can it happen again? What do we do that it should we do in order that it won't happen again? It's a story that we want to learn very carefully. Especially, obviously, it's not that long after Hashem created the world. Right? It's 1600, approximately, a little more than 1600 years after the world was created, and already such a destruction. It's very, very bothersome, because at the time of the flood, there were people who still saw first men, many. Right? So the story of creation is still very fresh. First hand, right? Testimony, and still that's where we are holding. So we want to understand the story. We do it every year from different perspectives, right? We want to add a way of understanding today. So in order to do it, I want to go first to the Psukim and see what the Torah says about the background to the story. Why did it happen? That's the first thing. Okay, so let's read the beginning of 31. These are the offspring of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God. Noah had begotten 3 sons, Shem, Ham, and Yefet. That's the beginning of the story. Now, what's the relationship between Noah and the flood? What do we know his share in the flood?
He's supposed to save the people. Or build the ark.
But what happened practically?
Save.
He was saved, right? He started a new reality, a new world that we are part of till today. If not of him, we would have not been here, right? All of mankind really came out of Noah. So it's very interesting that the Torah starts the story of the flood, not with the flood, but with
Noah.
Very interesting. What's written after is the cause to the flood. Won't we anticipate that it will be the other way around? I'm going to bring a flood. Noah, you are righteous, you are going to be saved. Make a teiva, and so on and so on. But no, the Torah starts with Noah. Okay, let's go further. Then we are coming to the cause. Now, the earth had become corrupt before God. And the earth had become filled with robbery. There are 2 sentences here. Right? The world has become corrupt. Right? And the world was filled with robbery. Question.
What's the
relationship? It seems like repetition, right? Corruption, robbery, seems to us the same. Obviously, if the Torah says 2 sentences, right, it means it has to be there, and we have to understand what's the difference. Okay, let's go further. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupted, for all flesh had corrupted its way upon the earth. Again, how does it look like?
Repetition.
Repetition. What's the addition in the second part that we didn't see in the first part? All, how does the Torah define it?
Flesh.
All flesh. When you said what's written, what did you say? People. And the question is, what is all flesh? Right? So obviously, it's not a common way to say people. So Rashi says, all flesh. Okay. Where is it?
What's the Hebrew word, Hamas?
Rashi says, even animals, right, did not behave. They did not stick to their own species. Okay, they mixed with other species, meaning the corruption affected even animals, which is very bewildering. Why?
They don't have free will.
They have no free will, right? What caused them to become corrupt, right? So it's a very interesting way to discover what's going on. Now, before we go further, I want to refer you to the end of Parashat Bereshit, where the cause for the flood is also written. It's not the first time here. Parashat Bereshit ends with describing the situation, the social situation of this generation. And then we start with Noah. So if we want to have the full picture, we have to go there. Okay? So, it's written the following. We are on page 27, verse number 1, chapter 6, verse number 1. And it came to pass when men began to increase upon the face of the earth, and daughters were born to them, the sons of the rulers saw the daughters of men were good, and they took themselves wives from whomever they chose. Which sin do we see here?
Also, arayos, adultery.
Immorality, right? Adultery, right? Gilui arayot, right? Now, so in Bereshit it's written Gilui arayot, right? Meaning immorality. What is written in Noah?
Robbery.
What seems more severe?
Immorality.
Now, Rashi proves from the language of the Torah that it was not only immorality, but they were also idol worshippers, and there were murderers. So, if we have the list of idol worshipping, murder, and immorality, do we see a reason why consequences will take place? No question. But now let's go to see how it is described in Noah again. Right? What we read already. What is the only reason given in Noah? That we read before.
Robbery.
And the question is, why? If we choose one out of the four as the real cause, I wouldn't choose robbery. Right? Idol worship is worse. Immorality is worth murder, let alone murder or stealing. So why would the Torah say as the cause, right, the last straw that broke, you know, the camel back, right, is robbery? Why is it so? Okay, so that's one question that we have. The second question that we raised was, why are animals also involved? Okay? Now let's go a little further. We'll raise a few more questions and then we'll answer. So Hashem tells Noah, make a teiva. He's given very detailed instructions how to build the teiva. And Noah was busy with it for 120 years as a means to rebuke his generation and make them aware what's going to come. And Hashem tells him in 17, and behold, I'm going to bring a flood. Page 33, the top. And as for me, Hashem says, behold, I am about to bring the flood waters upon the earth. Okay? It will destroy everything. Right? But I have a covenant with you. You and some creatures, some animals that will come into your ark will be saved. Okay. Noah is doing everything Hashem commands him. And now I want to see what happened practically when the flood came. Okay, so let's go to 35. Okay, so 35, verse number 11. Here we have the story of what took place after the warnings, right? In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, which is Cheshvan, today is Rosh Chodesh Cheshvan, so we are speaking about what happened really in the month that we are starting now, on the 17th day of the month, on that day, all the fountains of the great deep burst forth, and the windows of the heavens were opened, and the rain was upon the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. So 40 days, 40 nights. How does the Torah call it? What happened in 40 days and in those 40 days, 40 nights? What happened? Mountains opened and go further. And what?
Rain.
Very good. So it's a second name to the flood, right? Before it's called Mabul, now it's called rain, right? Why? So Rashi brings that Hashem was merciful, and in those 40 days it was still not as terrible, right? Rain, meaning there is still an option to go back. Okay, but 40 days and 40 nights of rain, and we are told that it was boiling waters. Okay, let's go further to 17. Here it's called when the flood was on the earth 40 days. The waters increased and raised the ark so that it was lifted above the earth. The waters strengthened and increased greatly upon the earth, and the ark drifted upon the surface of the waters. The waters strengthened very much upon the earth. All the high mountains which are under the entire heavens were covered. 15 cubits upward did the waters strengthen, and the mountains were covered, and all flesh that moves upon the earth expired among the birds, animals, and so on. And then I want you to go to 24, the last verse in this chapter. And the water strengthened on the earth 150 days. Okay, now, what's the purpose of the flood? What did Hashem say will the flood do?
Destroy
everything. Okay, the flood will destroy everything. So imagine it's already at a stage where all the mountains are covered. Is there still life there? Obviously not. What still happened?
More waters.
15 amot above the mountains. And how long did it take? 150 days. Now, a tsunami takes a very short period of time, right? And whoever is there is gone, right? You don't need 40 days for it. Let alone 150. You don't have to cover all the mountains and even 15 amot above in order to do what happened here. So what's the purpose of the 150 days of water rising and rising and rising and rising? What is it all about? So obviously it's more to the story than what we see on the superficial level. And it seems very harsh and very difficult. Still, interestingly enough, the name of Hashem that is mentioned in the story of the flood, in Tehillim, okay, when David HaMelech, King David, describes what happened in the flood, the name of Hashem is the name of mercy. Hashem Lamabul Yashav. That's the verse. Meaning Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, brought the flood. And we wonder, where is it? Right? 150 days, to the extent that people didn't just die, their whole body was
disintegrated.
Right? And the same with animals, trees, everything. And we call it mercy. What's going on here? So obviously we have to understand the story, and in order to understand it, I want to go to Bereshit. As I told you, we'll go through the two parshiot, we'll see the background, we'll understand what it is, and then we'll be able to understand and answer all the questions that we just asked. Okay, so Hashem created man and put him into a beautiful garden and gave him ideal life conditions. It was what we call Gan Eden, paradise, till today, right? It's a name for the best, the ideal, the most unbelievable. And as we know, on the first day after his creation, it was already, you know, not the same as when Hashem created the world. First man committed a sin and changed the whole reality of the human being. It's not only that he didn't do what Hashem told him, what he did changed him. Changed him, he became a creature of a different kind than what he was before, and I'm not going into how. But major changes in his spiritual essence took place. Now, when Hashem created the world, he knew obviously in advance that this is what will happen. Right? He gave free choice. If it's free to choose, this possibility is part of the script, right? And it took place. Does this mean Hashem should have not created the world?
No.
No. This can happen only to us. We do something, the results are not as we wanted, right? And we said, maybe we should have not done it altogether, right? Nobel Prize is a result of it, right? The person who discovered dynamite, he felt it will be helpful to people. When he saw the destruction that it causes, he wanted to rectify by giving the prize, right? This could happen to a human being. We don't foresee the future. But obviously, Hashem knows what will happen in the future. He knows that this is what will take place. So, it didn't work out on the first day. It will work out later. So what happened after? I want to direct you to the topic before the Torah starts, discussing the situation of the generation and the sins that caused the flood. Okay? So let's go to Bereshit. Chapter 5. Okay? It's page 25. Chapter 5, the beginning. This is the account of the descendants of Adam. On the day that God created man, it's 25, page 25. Okay? This is the account of the descendants of Adam. On the day that God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. He created the male and female, he blessed them, and called their name men on the day they were created. Okay, so that's the background, right? A sum up of what's written before, story of creation. And then, when Adam had lived 130 years, he begot in his likeness and his image, and he named him Shet. Okay, and he lived afterward so and so. When Shet was so and so in age, he begot a son, and he lived after so and so. How many generations do we have here?
Ten.
And who is the last?
Noah.
So right before the flood, we have a list of the 10 generations between Adam and Noah, meaning telling us this is what took place between the first day of creation and the story of the flood that is coming right after. Right? So there were 10 generations. Now why do I need it? What does the Torah tell me by giving me this list? So on the pshat level, there are many reasons. This gives us the knowledge that Noah, how many transmissions of the knowledge of creation took place in those years? It tells us the people of the flood basically had great-grandfathers, their great-grandfather was still alive. They heard, you know, very, very first hand about what happened in the beginning. Also, he tells us the years of the existence of creation, and there are other things that we learn from here. The names indicate to us that there was a decline, like we have names like Mechuyael, to wipe out, Metushael, to the godliness became weak. Right? There are many things that we learn from here. But I want to add one more teaching in this list that Rav Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin gives on a very deep level. And he says the following. These 10 generations, in this period of time, Hashem gave men the opportunity to correct what first men did wrong. If they would have lived up to it, if they would have taken advantage of this period of time, at the time of the flood, instead of a flood, there will be the giving of the Torah. Okay? He gave them enough time to correct what went wrong and to go from the low level that man put himself into as a result of the sin and rise to the level of the giving of the Torah, and this would have been Mashiach, the beginning of redemption. There is a hint to it. If you look at the end of Parashat Bereshit, I'll tell you the page. It's page 27. And we have to go to the Hebrew. We'll read it in the English first, but then we'll go back to the Hebrew. It's verse number 3 in chapter 6, page 27. And Hashem said, "My spirit shall not contend evermore concerning men, since he is but flesh." Okay? What's the Hebrew word for sins in the Hebrew? Beshegam. Very interesting word. Usually, how do we say sins in Hebrew? Ki. Right? What is Beshegam? Very interesting word. Okay? The gematria, the numerical value of Beshegam is Moshe. Moshe. And we are told that the soul of Moshe was there, meaning there was a potential Moshe in this generation, and if all the generations before or this generation would have done what they have to do, Moshe would have given them the Torah at that point. Unfortunately, they did not do what they had to do, and that's why the waters of Torah turned into
flood.
The waters of the flood. We know that the Torah is compared to water, right? In many places in the Torah, right? Because it's our source of life, right? So instead of giving the Torah to the generation, Hashem brought the flood. Now, the Tzadok HaKohen of Lublin goes further, and he says the following. What's the significance of 10 generations? We know that number 10 is mentioned many times, and in ethics of our fathers, there are sets of 10 things that we constantly mention. What are the 10 that are famous? Let's start from creation.
The
10 Ma'amarot, 10 sayings that Hashem created the world with. What other 10 do we have? The 10 Dibrot, and we know that they correspond to each other. What else?
10
Sefirot. 10 Sefirot, very good.
10 things that were created before creation?
It's 10?
10 items.
It's 10 items?
Yeah,
I was not aware that it's 10. Okay. Then the 10 tests of Abraham, right? The 10 tests that the people in the desert tested Hashem with. There are 10. What's the meaning of it? We can connect to Hashem, or Hashem reveals himself in this world in 10 ways. We are all familiar with the 7 attributes of Hashem, right? Chesed, kindness, gvura, strength, control, tiferet, glory, and so on. Then there is Chochmah, Bina, Da'at. 3 more. three aspects of wisdom, right? So there are seven character traits, attributes, and three that have to do with the brain, ways of thinking. We are supposed to perfect those aspects. We have to follow, we have to walk in the ways of Hashem, learn from the way He reveals Himself in this world and treats us, treats the world. We have to learn both the proper way of conducting ourselves and perfect ourselves in those 10 areas. So Hashem gave time. He gave 10 generations for each one to excel and correct one of those. Okay? And if they would have made the right choice, the right choices, then on the 10th generation, the Torah would be given. Now, Hashem didn't just give time. He gave also the means we need in order to accomplish it. Time is not enough. You have to be given the ways to achieve, the means to achieve. And I'm saying two things, the means and the ways. What's the difference between them? What are the means?
Tools.
Life, health, abundance, peace, all those are means that if we are given, they can help us achieve spiritual growth. So when we read in the Midrash what was the reality of these generations in terms of what Hashem gave, especially the generation before the flood, it was unbelievable. Okay, wheat had to be seeded once in 40 years. It was like a tree. Replenishing, you say itself,
so
right?
After Adam's curse, it went so easy.
What did you say?
After Adam's curse, it went so easy.
Even after Adam's curse, it was not Gan Eden, right? It was not like in paradise. But in comparison to what it is today, it was paradise, right? There was the weather was always like spring. As a result of it, there were less sicknesses or no sicknesses. They were giants. And so on and so on and so on. Hashem gave a lot of tools. Not paradise. They had to work still to an extent for the things, right? But they were mortal, right? Not like first man who was supposed to live forever. There were changes. But in comparison to life today, especially before the flood, right after first man, it was worse, but it improved. And before the flood, Hashem gave a lot. As to say, don't say you're not doing what you have to do because I didn't give you what it takes to accomplish. Here you have it all. Okay? That's means. But not only means, Hashem also gave ways to accomplish it. Gave ways. What were the ways to accomplish it? How could one come from the level of first man after the sin back to the level of first man before the sin? So Chazal say that Hashem wanted to give this generation, the generation of the flood, and the few before, right, that were supposed to accomplish it, four things that could help them accomplish what they have to accomplish. One we just mentioned, Torah. He wanted to give Torah to this generation. Torah helps us to fulfill the will of Hashem. Our reality after the giving of the Torah is very different than the one before. We have what we need, we have the manual. And it's more than the manual. The Torah is a connector to Hashem. So that's one thing. He wanted to give them three more things. Prayer, that is an obvious connector to Hashem and a way for growth. He wanted to give them offerings. And he wanted to give them hardships. Hardships. Yisurim. Because sometimes that's the way for growth.
They had carbonos before.
Yeah, but in these generations you don't hear about it till Noah after the flood.
Oh, I see.
Okay? But the Midrash says they did not ask for it. They did not ask. So they did not ask. Hashem didn't give. But if Hashem knows that this will help them, why wouldn't he give it without asking? Excellent. If you're not asking for it, you won't take advantage of it. If this is not what you want, how could I give you? I'll give you Torah, you don't want it. It'll be meaningless. I'll give you the Siddur. You have no interest in connecting to Hashem. What will he do? Right? Meaning, in other words, this Midrash indicates to us what caused the problem. What caused the problem was that this generation did not want to connect to Hashem. What did they want?
Pleasure and freedom.
Pleasure, very good. Immorality, idol worship, murder. What is it all about?
Me.
I want what I want. Don't stand in my way. I want to do whatever I want. Now, we have to add a point here that is very, very important. As I said before, these generations were very high-level generations. They were very close to creation. Many of them, so Adam, so Shet, so Hanoch, so Metoshelach, so creation almost, right? God's first description of Gan Eden, right? How did they come to it? What happened here? Interestingly enough, in a way, their greatness brought them to it. I'll explain. I know it sounds a paradox, but I'll explain. These people were on a very high spiritual level. They had access to the spiritual aspect of reality. When we see a table, we see a table, something physical, tangible. They saw the spirituality that holds the table together. They were very close to creation yet and on a higher level. They knew how the spiritual aspect of creation functions. They saw the spiritual powers and had knowledge, good knowledge of and understanding of the spiritual makeup of this world. What we would call in another word the world of the angels, who are the messengers of Hashem to operate the spiritual realm of this creation. And being that they knew it so well, they felt they can have control of them and prevent them from affecting them. I'll give you a current example. People who are great scientists, very, very big experts in science. They see the wonders of the world. Does it bring them necessarily to a connection with God? Sometimes it's the exact opposite. Because they feel they have control, they feel they don't need anybody. Right? They will control. They are in charge of their life. They are prolonging life, we are finding solutions to endless things, right? 50 years ago, we thought there will be no food on earth anymore, not we, but scientists, right? We know that if Hashem will give existence to the world, he will give food too, right? But people spoke about no resources anymore. Then, via scientists and genetic engineering and so on, there is enough food. So it might give a feeling, I'm fine. I know enough in order to maintain my life and have a good life. And as a result of it, disconnect from God. They were beyond it. It was not just about the physical nature of the world. It was about the real mechanism that operates this world. The spiritual powers that are in charge, that Hashem sends, so to speak, to operate his will, to execute his will in this world. So they said, we know the angel of fire. I'm now quoting the Midrash. I explained it before, so now it will have meaning. We know the angel of fire. We know the angel of water. We can control them. We know how they operate. We can control them. Meaning, in other words, it was the goods that they had and the information that they had access to and their greatness, meaning their ability to see the spiritual realm that was misused by them. And instead of bringing them to God, right, they used it in order to do whatever they want. And we have to understand that the more a person knows, the more the higher a person is, the more access he has, the more he is in danger of this failure. Right? People who don't know that they have no control. Right? People who do know, who do discover, who do invent, who do innovate, who innovate and so on, have the feeling, might have the feeling, it's me and I have control. Okay? Meaning the higher the person is, his Yetzer Hara is stronger. Okay? So, Hashem gave them means. Hashem gave them ways to get there. But they were not interested. They did not ask for it. If they would have understood that the one who runs the show is Hashem, and yes, he did give angels the ability to execute, but it's only an expression of his will, and if he will change the will, they will have no power, or they'll do the opposite than what they do now, and execute the new will of Hashem, right? If they would have seeked a connection to Hashem, obviously Hashem would have given it to them, but if they don't ask for it, obviously there is no point in giving, because then it will be misused. Okay? So, 10 generations that Hashem gave, even though we failed, even though first man committed a sin, and Hashem could have said, see what I gave you and see what you did, goodbye, shalom, right, let's destroy the world. He didn't do so. He gave 10 generations the opportunity to correct 10 things, and obviously gave each generation the means and the tests that are necessary to correct the aspect that they were assigned to. And they didn't do it. So being that this is the case, and being that it's the majority, vast majority of people, so what's the point in continuing? Right? The world was created for a purpose. Even though we failed, Hashem gave us the opportunity to correct, and we did not take advantage, people didn't want. So if people didn't want, what's the point in going ahead? I want to show you something amazing. Look at the last pasuk in Parashat Bereshit. It's a malbim that I'm going to tell you, which is fascinating. Okay? Let's start on page 27. Verse number 5. Hashem saw that the wickedness of men was great upon the earth, and that every product of the thoughts of his heart was but evil always. Very grave picture. Right? Very grave picture. And Hashem reconsidered having made man on earth. It doesn't mean he changed his mind. I won't go into it at the moment. Right? And he had hurtful sadness. Okay? That's how terrible the situation. And Hashem said, I will blot out men whom I created from the face of the earth, from men to animal, to creeping things, and to birds of the sky. For I have reconsidered my having made men. What do you anticipate right after?
Destruction.
The destruction of the flood. But how does the parsha end? Let's see. But Noah found grace in the eyes of Hashem. Says the Malbim, if not that Noah would have found grace in the eyes of Hashem, the flood would have not come. If not that Noah found grace in the eyes of Hashem, the flood would not come. What does he say?
There was a man who could find God.
He didn't want to destroy the world totally and completely.
Excellent. If not that Noah is there, or somebody that found kindness in the eyes of Hashem, so there is no point in destruction. Because it means I created a world and it failed, goodbye. This can never happen. It's because there was a person who could restart in the proper way that there was a point of destroying what is. Because it's not a total destruction. It's a new beginning. That's where the mercy is. Unbelievable. Right? And that's why this pasuk is inserted here, and the next portion starts with, these are the generations of Noah, and only then does the Torah say what's the cause. Okay? It's a fascinating Malbim. Right? What I would say is the following, if I would have written the story, as an historian, right? Not from a godly perspective.
It comes after the Nichamti.
Very good. I would say, I regret that I created man. I'm going to destroy everything. Hashem says, right, there isn't, right? And then Noah did find kindness in the eyes of Hashem. Hashem told him, build an ark, go into it. This is not what the Torah says. The Torah says, I'm going to destroy. Noah found kindness. Description of Noah. And only then going back to the reason for the destruction. And then to the ark. Right? So between two times of saying, I'm going to destroy, there is an interruption with Noah. To say, being that there is a hope for the future via Noah, that's why I'm going to destroy. Because it's not destruction for the sake of destruction. It's like destructing an old building in order to be able to build something better, more efficient, something that will serve the purpose. Okay, is this clear? Mm-hmm. Okay, we'll go further after the break.
Does this almost tell us that maybe if you have it too easy, it's not good?
So this takes a pleasure, but it's wrong. It's unbelievable. Tyrants of love.
I'm
a little bit too challenged, I feel, but not in Hashem's opinion. I went for a stomach CAT scan, and Friday afternoon I was told they saw something in my breast. So I have to go today. Mammogram, sonogram, maybe I have cancer, hopefully I don't. But very upsetting.
Sure.
Yeah, here I was concerned about my father, trying to get through my other things, and now I have to add this.
Hopefully it won't be anything. Maybe only the fear and not the...
I can call you maybe in tonight.
Yeah, in your session. On my set.
Like 2 o'clock, and then 1:30, and then 2 o'clock, and then see the radiologist.
Call me as early as you can, because... Oh, I'll give you my cell number.
Okay. You want to say my name now? I have it someplace. I don't know which one it is. In the past, I've had biopsies. I can't be left alone, you know? I don't know which one is 744-8655?
Okay. So call me on this.
You want to say my name now? Or
what is it?
Yenta Shendel.
Yenta Shendel, but?
Blima.
Yenta Shendel, but Blima, therefore, she's dedicating the class to the portion. Do you want me to announce it, or you want me just...
Yeah.
So Yenta Shendel, but Blima.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Just 1 second. Do you know this person?
Sucheva Koenia.
She seems to be mentioned. She's requesting help from the courts.
She does not.
She needs it.
She does not. Uh-huh. She's really disabled in so many ways. She has a lot of pain. I can't think of it. It's a real thing. It's a real
okay, that's all I want.
Yes.
How are you?
Nice to see you.
Hashem, delighted to be here, honored. I wanted to give you nachas. 4 of my daughters are still in Jewish day school, and last night for their bat mitzvah, one of my twins, 11 years old, took out the prepare vote and started learning with me. To the point I was so tired, my head went on the table, and she came with a pillow and she gave it to me.
Unbelievable.
So generations, so thank you for teaching.
Good.
Sorry, I'm so,
so
sorry.
Nice to see you.
Did you get my message?
Yeah, I got your message.
I'm so
don't
worry. I can't believe
I
so many things I started.
Oh,
yeah,
so
and then
too.
I realized that after.
Understanding what we said till now will help us to go further and answer the other questions that we asked. If you remember, we asked, why would the Torah say in the beginning 3 major sins and corruption? And later on, the Torah says corruption only, right? As the cause for the flood. Aren't the 3 more severe than corruption, than robbery? Right? This was one question that we asked. Second question that we asked was, why 150 days of raising waters when everything was destroyed already? Right? And the third question that we asked was, why were the animals destroyed as well? How is it that they committed sins, that they were immoral, so to speak? Right? They don't have free choice. Why are they accountable for it? What is it all about? Okay? So we said the following. Hashem gave this generation means. He gives every generation means. Every human being who is alive because Hashem gives him means. Right? Life itself is a means. Right? And obviously Hashem doesn't give only life. He gives other things. We have food, we have clothes, we have shelter, we have many things that are given to us by Hashem constantly. We have air, whatever it is. Right? Hashem constantly gives means. Right? Now, those means are as we call them, means. Meaning they are given for a purpose. They are given for a purpose. We have to do something with them. We have to use them in order to bring the world to purpose. Among the other things that Hashem gives us is desires, love. All those are things that Hashem instilled in us. We are created with an ability to love, with an ability to want. And this is a means too. Because what does he want us to do with it?
Do good stuff.
To do good things. To love other people and take care of them. Right? To love him and connect to him. Right? He gave us desires, so we desire spirituality. But we have free choice. We can take it, the same means that he gave us in order to do what we are supposed to do, and use it just to pursue our own physical desires. Love can be very beautiful and it can be very ugly. Desires can be wonderful and they can be horrible. The question is, what do we do with it? Right? Like anything else. Now, when a person is given means, physical means, that with them he can serve Hashem, and he doesn't utilize it for it, what does he do basically? If you think about it, it's stealing.
It's what?
It's stealing. It's robbery. If I give you money to accomplish something, and you use it for your own good, you don't do what I gave you the money for. That's robbery, right? That's the definition of robbery. When a person uses the means that Hashem gave him properly, Hashem bestows more. Hashem bestows more. He uses the things in the proper way. Obviously, he should have more because he uses it properly. When a person takes what Hashem gave him and uses it against the will of Hashem, he will stop giving. Now, I want to read to you a part from the Shem Yishmuel, and he says as follows. He says, even though the people of this generation committed the three very severe sins, the flood came, the straw that broke the camel back was robbery. Why? The other three are more severe, right? So he says as follows. This went, the physical, is the physical expression of spiritual reality. The same way that we have a physical reality, we have a spiritual reality, like the human being has a body and a soul, right? The same way the whole world has a physical element to it and a spiritual element. If not of the spiritual, nothing would have existed. What gives existence to the wood? It's the godly energy that is inside it. And today we know it even scientifically, right? Let's go further. And he says, and we have to remember, when a person robs other people, his punishment is that he is robbed of as well. If I take something from somebody else, I took something that could give him life. Somebody has money, I take the money away. I took the means to sustain him alive. Right? This money, you buy food, money is the way to sustain him. Somebody has a house, I take it away. His life is not the same, it might be endangered. Right? I'm taking away what sustains his life. As a result of it, on the spiritual level, Hashem takes away what sustains me spiritually. What sustains me spiritually? The help of Hashem. The help of Hashem. In the process of growth, I cannot accomplish without Hashem. The same way that I cannot get anything physical without Hashem, I cannot get anything spiritual also without the help of Hashem. But if I take away from a person the source of his physical life, Hashem takes away from the person the source of his spiritual life. Now, does this mean the person is doomed? No. But he'll have to accomplish spiritually on his own without the help of Hashem. And that's extremely difficult. Usually, each step that I take in spiritual development, Hashem steps towards me in his giant steps and helps. So I can go to the next stage. But if a person takes away the life means, the means of life of another person, it doesn't enable another person to sustain his life because he takes away his means, he doesn't deserve that Hashem will give him what will sustain him spiritually. So he doesn't get godly help. And if he doesn't get godly help, he cannot, or it's extremely difficult for him to do the right thing. That's the meaning he says. That's what the Torah tells us when the Torah says it was the robbery that created the problem. Because if it would have been immorality, idol worship, and murder, right? Not robbery. Hashem would have still helped the person to come back to him. He will awaken his heart to do tshuva. Of course, it depends on the person if he will, you know, listen to what Hashem implants in his heart and do it or not, right? But Hashem will help in the process. When the person doesn't care about maintaining the life of other people, Hashem doesn't help him in the process. And then it's very, very difficult to do the job. Okay? That's the meaning of it's robbery that caused really the problem. Yes?
Murder, you're taking away the person's life, period.
You are right. But there are other ways Hashem Hashem responds to this. Right? Every sin has its own response. The response of robbery is Hashem doesn't help. The same way he doesn't help, Hashem doesn't help. And when Hashem doesn't help, it's very, very difficult.
Could that go reversed? Can we extrapolate from what you're saying that if somebody helps people physically,
yes,
then Hashem will help them spiritually?
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yes.
Is robbery something like the umbrella? And then
excellent.
The spokes.
Excellent.
Murder.
Excellent. This is another explanation that I was going to say. If you think in general, robbery is really the umbrella. Why? Because each time that I take what I was given, what I have, and harm with it, myself or others, I basically took the means that Hashem gave me for a purpose, and I misuse them. I'm robbing them for and use them for another thing. So basically, it's the umbrella for everything. For example, there are other people in this world. They are created as means for my growth as well. Besides their own purpose, they are means for my growth. Because by me treating them properly, I fulfill my purpose and I grow. Right? So the moment a person kills another person, right, he took away, he robbed the world from a means. It's robbery. If I'm giving money by Hashem, I'm rich. And I don't use it to do what it was intended for. I don't give charity. I don't help good causes. I'm robbing. It's robbery. Hashem gave it to me for a purpose. Everything that is in this world is for a purpose. And if I do not use it for a purpose, that's robbery. So basically, that's the umbrella for everything. Immorality. Hashem created connections. He created a man and a woman. and they are supposed to get married and have a family, right? It's a means to grow. It's a topic on its own. Why is this the way Hashem created the world? And how does it help to grow, getting married and having children and so on? When a person misuses the desire to connect to another gender, he rubs. Because instead of using it to grow, he uses it to become more physical. Right? So that's why, basically, every sin that we commit is robbery. Everything that we commit is robbery. It's very interesting. There is a famous part in the book Strive for Truth of Hrav Dessler called Giving and Taking. And he basically says giving is the umbrella for everything. Taking is the umbrella for all negativity. And that's basically the same idea. Right? Because if I take the means that Hashem gave me and I give to others, I use it for purpose. If I keep it just for myself and my own desires, rather than for developing what Hashem wants me to develop, I'm robbing, I'm taking. Okay? So that's why the Torah singles out robbery. Now, I want to go further with the idea. We said, the explanation told us that there is a spiritual reality and a physical reality. And our actions in the physical world create a spiritual reality. A person takes away possessions of other people, it will affect the spiritual reality of this person. Hashem won't help him to grow. Right? Because there are two realities, they are interconnected, and one affects the other. Is this clear? Okay. Let's go visit one more step. When the Torah discusses the sins of these people, of this generation, the Torah speaks about actions, and the Torah speaks about thoughts. If you look at Bereshit, the Torah says, page number 27, the Torah says, Hashem saw that the wickedness of man was great upon the earth, that's action, and every product of the thoughts of his heart was but evil always. So we have action and thought, right?
What sentence?
That was math.
It's 27, verse number 5. Yeah, okay. So there were actions that were wrong, and there were thoughts that were wrong. When we do actions, we know we change things, right? You cut a tree, you see what you did. You plant a tree, you see what you did. You help a person, you see the results, right? There are things, actions, we can see their consequence or their effect with our own eyes, right? Thoughts, we think, I just had a thought. But it's not true. Everything that was created is part of the purpose and is here to create the world that Hashem wants. When I have a positive thought, I create positive energy. It affects the environment. If a person has a negative thought, it affects the environment. I don't see it. But let me tell you, do we see bacteria, viruses, and all the rest? Do we see pollution? And it has a big effect on our life. Right? So even in the physical world, there are many things that are not seen, but are there, and are affecting the reality. Right? The same way that we have physical pollution, we have spiritual pollution. The same way that we have clean air spiritually. And it's a result of thoughts, actions, and speech. Everything was created for a purpose. And that's why everything we do, say, or think creates an environment, creates a reality. You know, we know today scientifically that speaking to water or putting a piece of paper with a positive word in water will cause it to freeze in a wonderful way, and very organized diametric way, right? And if he symmetric way, and if he put something negative, we'll see chaos under the microscope, right? There is a whole book written about it. I don't know if you're familiar with it or not. But there is a connect. What we do, what we think, affects the reality. This generation failed in two ways, by evil actions, speech and action, but also in thoughts, as the Torah describes. And as a result of it, there was pollution. The point was not just to kill the people, to destroy those who had free choice. The point was to create a world clean of the spiritual pollution that was created by the thoughts of these people. And that's why we needed the 150 days. And that's why the flood continued after the people were gone already. Because the environment was not yet clean. So if you'll take people and bring them back to this negative environment, it will affect them and you can't start again fresh. I want to show you that this is an idea that goes all through Torah. We know that before the Jewish people went down to Egypt, Sarah and Abraham were there for a short time, right? Then Yosef was there, and only then the Jewish people came. And there are a lot of similarities between those three stories, right? Yosef was a slave before, and then he was freed and became the king. The Jewish people went down, they were slaves, afflicted, and only then they came out with great miracles. Sarah was taken to Pharaoh and suffered, and only then she came out. What is it all about? Egypt was a place contaminated with impurity. The environment, spiritual environment, was so intense that for a nation to come in and prepare for the giving of the Torah was impossible. The environment had to be purified a little bit. So when Sarah came and overcame the test with Abraham, and then Yosef came and acted the way he acted in this horrible place, they were very great people who had the ability to do it, they cleaned up the air to an extent. To the extent that the Jewish people could handle and overcome the rest. Okay? So in this generation, everything was polluted. It was polluted to this extent that animals behaved immoral just as a result of the environment. It wasn't a choice, but it created a new reality on a spiritual level that affected animals too. And that's why there was a need for purification. And that's why the way Hashem punished was by water. Why water? What does it remind us? What does water do? Yeah. Mikveh, purification. Excellent. It's like, immersing in a mikveh. More than this. Before creation, what was the reality in this world? Everything water. It's coming back to the beginning, purifying, starting fresh, erasing the effect of what these people created spiritually. And that's why everything had to be wiped off. If God forbid there is a contaminating sickness, the clothes are burned. Right? Everything that the person touched, right, will have to go through a purification process in order that it won't spread further. So it's not that the animals did something wrong by choice. But this became the reality. So if we want to start again, we have to make sure everything is cleaned. I want to show you from the Torah itself, based on the Kli Akar, that this was done. At the end of the Reshit, no, it's the beginning of Noah, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. Verse number 31. Okay? It's written as follows. Verse number 11. Now, the earth has become corrupt before God. What's the Hebrew term? Now the earth became corrupt. What's page number 31? Verse number 11, beginning of Noah. Vatishachet. Vatishachet. What is lehashchit usually?
Destroy.
Is this the word for corrupt? But that's what's written. The world was destroyed. Okay? And then, in the next pasuk, Yud Gimel 13. No, let's go 12 and 13. 12. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupted. For all flesh had corrupted its way upon the earth. Right? So three times we have the term lehashchit. Right? Words from the root of lehashchit, right? Usually it means destruction, but the Torah uses it for corruption. Now let's go further. In verse number 13, God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with robbery through men, and behold, I am about to destroy them. So in this verse in the English, we have two verbs. One is the verse of robbery, right? And one is I'm going to destroy them. If you look here, the same root is used for destruction. Before, tishachet, nishcheta is for corruption. And in this verse, in anima shchitam is for destruction. Very interesting. The Torah should have said, all of earth is filled with robbery. I'm going to destroy them. The Torah doesn't say so. The Torah says, world is corrupted, nishcheta, right, is destroyed, basically, if you translate literally, right? I am destroying them. So if it's destroyed already, what is the meaning of I'm destroying them? You understand? If you do what art school did, they didn't translate literally. In the beginning you say, earth is corrupted. Then you say, I destroy it. I'm going to destroy it. It's understood, right? They did corruption, Hashem destroyed. But if you say, earth is destroyed three times, why do you say later on, I'm going to destroy it? Okay? So a combination of the Or HaChaim and the Kli Yakar. It's a fascinating insight. But the Kli Yakar and the Or HaChaim say is the following. Earth is a physical reality. But in truth, it's more a spiritual reality than a physical reality. Because the physical existence depends on the spiritual. Okay? The physical existence depends on the spiritual. It's just that the spiritual we don't see. Let's take the example of a human being. A human being has a physical aspect and a spiritual aspect. Is he more physical or more spiritual? What's more essential here? The spiritual. If he has no soul, so he's no man. The physical has no existence. Right? When a human being does something negative, he affects the spiritual. The spiritual becomes weaker. Or we can say it in the verse of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, the divine presence is removed a little higher. The parts partially. And each time that he does something negative, he departs more and more and more and more. Right? Now, if you take away the soul, what happens? It's destroyed. And that's why the Torah says the word destruction for robbery. Because each time that an act of robbery is done, some of the spirituality is gone. Right? It's destroyed. You do it enough times, and then it's all gone. So in essence, the world was destroyed before the flood. The soul departed already. Now it was only the disintegration. Right? Just the physical aspect of it went away as well. But what commentaries explain, the Kli Yakar, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, it was not just destruction. By going through this experience, Hashem changed reality. He weakened the power of the physical. Like purified the air. In what way? He weakened the power of physicality to the extent that it will never be so strong that it will be able to bring another flood and a total destruction. Meaning, going through this experience of the flood affected mankind. The same way that the sin of first man affected mankind. That's the purpose of punishment. It's not, you didn't do my will, I'll show you. It's help to correct. So Hashem purified the world again. And when the world came about after the flood, it was a little less physical. Physicality lost a little bit of its strength. There are changes after the flood. We have four seasons. Life is shorter. Physicality is less strong. All of it helps us to do the will of Hashem. Imagine not dying, living 1,000 years. When will people wake up to spirituality? And how much damage will they cause till then? Right? Imagine always spring. Compare California to other parts of the state. Right? It can be used beautifully. And when Mashiach will come, it will come back to the old, and then it won't be challenging anymore. We'll be after the test. But at the moment, Hashem weakened the physical, meaning the flood is not a punishment the way we understand. The flood is Hashem changing the world, destroying those who have no hope. Okay? And changing the world so that when the people come back after the flood and build again, they have all that they need in order to succeed. They still have free choice, but they have more of what they need in order to succeed. This will explain to us something very beautiful. Hashem wanted to save Noah and his children. How did he do it? At Teva. For how long were they there?
4 years.
A year. If you follow the psukim, a full year. What did they do there day and night?
Feeding
animals. Was Noah righteous? Did he deserve to be saved? Why does he have to go through a year like this? Right? It seems not measure against measure. Hashem can save him instantly. He doesn't need a teiva, Hashem, in order to save Noah. Can a teiva of these measurements, wasn't big, sustain a couple of animals from each kind and the kosher 7 couples and all the food that they need for a year? It was a miracle anyhow. So if it's a miracle anyhow, he can save him without all this toil and difficulty. But what was the main problem, did we say? Robbery. What's life in the ark?
Giving.
It's creating a new reality. Giving, giving, giving. Constant giving. Creating a new environment. Taking all that Hashem created for purpose. Rather than stealing all that Hashem gave by using it, rubbing all that Hashem gave by using it against his will. Trying to manipulate nature and saying, Hashem, you gave it right, but you gave it to us so we can do whatever we want. And being that we know how to control, right, all spiritual powers, we'll just have fun and forget about you. So the flood when King David says, Hashem lamabul yashav, it's the attribute of mercy, right? Hashem lamabul yashav, not Elohim, not the attribute of judgment, it's the attribute of mercy. Because all along the way, before the flood, all the warning for 120 years, then at the year of the flood, Noah in the ark and so on, maintaining him miraculously so we can create a reality of giving over a year, and all the changes that we don't have time to discuss today, but all the changes in nature after the flood, all the consequences that seem like punishment, are ways in which Hashem helps mankind to succeed by making the physical a little less appealing, a little less manipulating the spiritual. Interestingly enough, we are told, and I usually don't go this direction, but here the catastrophe is so overwhelming that I think that it's helpful to hear this too. We are told that the souls of the people of the generation of the flood came back at the time of the giving of the Torah. Came back in reincarnation at the time of the giving of the Torah. The souls of the people of the generation of the flood were purified via this process. So it's even for them building for the future. Not only for mankind in general, for the world in general, for the animals that will be later on, but even for these very people. The very fact that Hashem made them go through all of it and created a new reality enabled after 10 more generations that still failed to bring Abraham into the picture, who will succeed in passing 10 tests, right? And eventually his children will get the Torah, and there will be the souls of the people who perished in the flood. Okay, we'll finish. Yes. I can't hear.